welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm the presenter of this show, as well as the founder of the UK charity of the same name, Yes to Life. The show's all about integrative medicine for cancer, as is the charity, helping people with cancer to learn about and benefit from integrative medicine approaches. My guest on the show today is the brilliant Dr. Lauren McDonald. Lauren has a background in psychology and psychiatry, but her own experience of a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, stage 4 being the worst in terms of survival chances, has focused her attention on the area of what is called mind-body medicine, on supporting the body's innate healing mechanisms and building resilience. A key element for Lauren in this endeavour has been embracing surrender, and so today I'm going to be talking to Lauren over the internet about building resilience and the power of surrender. Hi, Lauren, lovely to have you back on the Yes to Life show.
Hi Robin, lovely to be here, thank you for having me.
So we've got two great topics to discuss today, the first of which couldn't be more appropriate right now as we approach the end of a whole year of living through the COVID crisis, and that's the topic of resilience. So resilience is a catch-all word that covers the state of the body, the mind and the spirit. And I know that you're particularly interested in the last two, the mind and the spirit. But of course, you also have quite a bit to say about the inseparability of all three. So one way or another, I think we'll cover the lot today. Resilience is an increasingly popular term in healthcare that's getting applied to both patients and staff. Can I start out by asking you for your definition or description of resilience?
So, yeah, I mean, first of all, it is just so important, like you said, for both, you know, NHS front workers at the moment and just key workers in general, but also patients and anyone going through life. As we know, Earth School is incredibly challenging and we all need that resilience. So Yes. For me, resilience means that ability to adapt and bounce back when we come up against challenges. And that might be our health, that might be financial, whatever it is. But it is that ability to not kind of collapse underneath it all, but keep going, but do so in a way that's healthy, that enables us to thrive on the other side of it rather than exhausting us.
Right. Not the gritted teeth, not the British stiff upper lip.
Exactly. So right. it's a bit more graceful than that, although it's challenging. It's not easy, but it is a bit more graceful than kind of holding on for dear life.
Right, right. Okay, so it's an enormously important resource to be able to draw on when going through cancer, of course, or indeed going through cancer amidst a worldwide health crisis. So it can appear to be a characteristic that some people have and others don't. And I'd say this is true on one level, but as with other personal resources, say like language skills or musicality, I assume there's scope for developing personal resilience.
Definitely. I mean, we're all, like you said, there's so many of our characteristics that are inbuilt, either that we've inherited or maybe we've learned at a young age. And yet things like resilience we can build, and it really is a muscle. And the more we practice it, the more we do things that test us and challenge us and take us out of our comfort zone. Every little thing like that helps us to build up our resilience. So just in our day to day, we can be doing these small activities, but also sometimes when we are faced with these huge life challenges, be it cancer or another crisis, it's the way that we move through it, just carefully, slowly, and really compassionately with ourselves, that enables us to build this kind of resilience muscle up, so that when we come up with the next crisis, come up against it, because which, you know, we know we always will.
Right.
We think that we'll maybe just have one big event happen to us. But as you know, Robin, with my own story, yeah, I've just had one thing after another. And I've always come out the other side a little bit stronger, and knowing that I can get through that actually helps me when the next big life event happens.
Right.
And it does make it easier in the long run.
Yeah, and you know, you can really sense with, you know, I know a lot of people who've had cancer and they are alive many, many, many years later, and they've achieved a remarkable level of resilience where they, the things they take in their stride is quite extraordinary. They actually have really learned a lot from their experience, and they will happily say so.
Yeah, that's it. And I think quite a lot of that comes from this idea of post-traumatic growth as well, that we
Okay.
can go through this big experience. And if we go through it in a way that, like I said, is healthy and actually helps nourish us and strengthen us, at the end of that, hopefully, we will have that post-traumatic growth. And that will enable us to look back at the experience with meaning and just taking gifts from the pain, really, is what it's also about.
Interesting that, isn't it? The way looking back on things, you're right, is that something that was may have been the worst experience of your life at the time, you are able to actually look back on it and say, well, I wouldn't be without that experience because of what I've learned.
That's it. And we want to run away from pain. We're hardwired for safety and
Yes, fair
security. We don't like
enough.
pain. But actually, I think the process of building this resilience is also a process of sitting with our pain and not running away from it, not ignoring it, not trying to suppress it, which, like you mentioned, the British stiff upper lip is that idea of really not feeling what's really there. And I think by sitting with the pain and going through the challenge, we open up a bit of a portal, and it's a bit of an initiation into a stronger version of ourselves as well on the other side.
Well, that's very well described. And yeah, great. Well, I think we're probably going to come across that quite a bit in the talk today about this actually, this thing of staying with something, which is like, it's sort of counterintuitive. You say there's this sort of runaway kind of, we run towards things we like and we run away from things we don't at alarming speed. And yes, that sitting with things is actually, we're not sort of brought up to it in a way, are we?
No, not at all. And we talked a little bit on our previous session when we talked a few years ago now, but about how the body is also it's almost beyond our own consciousness. It's a very innate thing that we do. We actually Our physiology is set up to help us run away from pain. So we have our autonomic nervous system and this sympathetic drive to make us run from danger. So not only are we battling a mindset that wants to take us away from danger and pain, but actually on a very physiological level, we're also wanting to actually physically move away from it as well. So it's really against our instinct to come back and sit with that pain and allow the lessons to come in from that place.
But in some ways, it's the muddling, if you like, of the lack of distinction between mental pain and physical pain that we tend to have, I think, where we treat mental pain in just the same way as physical pain. I mean, it makes sense to get away from physical pain if you can, but mental pain sometimes is self-inflicted, and so even trying to get away from it is doesn't work. And it's a different arena we're working in.
It is. And yet, at the same time, as you mentioned, there's such an overlap between the body and the mind. And we can actually end up thinking ourselves unwell. This idea of somatic experience or psychosomatic experiencing, where actually, if you are really, really distressed in your mind, you end up, if you say, for example, have psoriasis or eczema, those kind of conditions can really flare up when we're stressed. And
Absolutely.
equally, the pain that we feel in our body understandably impacts us on a mental level. So conditions like chronic fatigue, which is incredibly complicated, and I'm in no way saying that that's in the mind. There really is evidence that it is in the body, but that can obviously impact our minds, and we feel fatigued, and in that way it can be really stressful, and that can lead to things like depression. So everything is really tied up together. There is very much the body and mind overlap, the body, mind and spirit, really. I want to say all three together.
Absolutely. So look, let's start with the bit we can get a grips with. Let's start with the body, and even though the mind and spirit are the key focus for your work, I think getting to grips with the more abstract realms of mind and spirit, it can actually help if you start at the with the physical. I'm just wondering if you want to point us to key areas for attention and the resources at hand if you want to build your physical resilience.
Yeah, so I do always start in the body, just because it's something that we can all understand. And like you said, we can start to get a bit esoteric when we start talking about spirit. Although I do really believe that that can impact our physical health and our mental health.
Yeah.
But on a very kind of physical level, we build resilience, like I said, by it's really all about the nervous system. So as I mentioned, we have our autonomic nervous system, and this is divided into the sympathetic system and the parasympathetic system. And when we're scared, when we're fearful, when we're running from danger, we're in that sympathetic system. We're relying on it to help us to increase our blood pressure, our heart rate, and actually physically run. So even though in modern day, quite often it's things like emails that are stressing us out,
right,
or decisions we have to make. And, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, that is why we have that sympathetic drive, to help us run away from fear and things we don't want to be around, really. And so what we want to do is help shift away from that sympathetic drive. So that's what's where we have our cortisol and our adrenaline and all of those hormones that are released that evolutionary advantageous to help us run away, but actually in our modern day they don't serve us, and actually they can also be really detrimental to our physiology. As we know, they can fuel inflammation, so it's really in our favor to come back into the parasympathetic system, which is this healing rest and digest state, which I'm sure you've talked about so many times on this, because for me this parasympathetic state is really where the body can help, you know, self-heal, really.
Right.
And the body is so well equipped to do that. When we look after our parasympathetic nervous system, we're actually looking after our immune system, we're looking after all the systems of the body. And so by starting with that aspect of the body, by thinking about the parasympathetic system, we really come to the vagus nerve, and that is this nerve that goes all the way from the brain, and it innervates pretty much all of the body, to be honest, the organs, the diaphragm. And we can strengthen that nerve, and it's actually really two nerves, but we call it the vagus nerve. Mm-hmm. And there's so many activities that we can do to strengthen that, and one of my favorites at the moment is cold water swimming. It's been in the news loads,
it's all the rage,
especially during 2020. It just seems that everybody got into cold water swimming, and
except
of course
me.
It's wonderful for the endorphins that you get the moment when you jump in. But obviously beyond that it actually helps to build your resilience, and it does that by strengthening this vagal tone. And the more that we do things like cold water swimming, or even cold showers if you don't have access to that, the more we can strengthen this vagal tone, the more that we are able to then tolerate stresses in our lives. And actually, like I said at the very beginning, this idea that resilience is being the ability to bounce back and adapt.
Mm-hmm.
So by strengthening the vagus tone, that is what we're doing. It means that when we come across a challenge in the future or something stressful in our life, it can actually, we can overcome it quicker. We can bounce back, and we can come back to our homeostatic kind of balance much easier than we did before.
Mm.
So the vagus nerve is, I mean, it's talked about a lot now, which is wonderful. But I know when I was going through medical school, we didn't really discuss it. And there's so many practices, like I said, the cold water swimming and things like singing and chanting. That's wonderful for the vagal tone.
Mm.
And then your movement practices, things like yoga as well.
Right.
So there's so many things that we can be doing on a very physical level to improve our resilience.
Mm. So tell me, you talk about improving, I think you said improving the tone of your vagus nerve, is that right? And was that the right word?
Exactly.
Yes. So does that have a physiological, can you see it, or can it be measured or anything? I mean, is there actually anything to show for that, or is it more in terms of how you behave?
There's something called heart rate variability, which can be measured, which actually it basically measures the way that we're able to return again to this balance, this homeostasis after a challenging experience. So that's something that can be measured, and there are devices you can get to do that. But beyond that, it's the way you feel in your body. It's the way you feel when you come up against stresses, because at the end of the day, we're all experts on our own physiology. And you'll notice the more that you do these activities. I didn't mention breath work. That's another wonderful way to kind of tone the vagus nerve. But all of these things, you will hopefully in time just notice that you're not maybe being quite as responsive. You're a little bit calmer when things happen to you that would normally maybe make you fly off the handle, you're actually able to respond in a different way. So it's both, really. I mean, you can definitely measure it on a physiological level, but it's actually, I think, more importantly, how you feel inside on a psychological level.
Right. So it's an absence of unnecessary knee-jerk reactions. Would that be fair?
Yeah, exactly. This ability to kind of bounce back and not stay stuck in the grief or the anger or whatever emotion that's come up to you, really. It's about just bringing yourself back into a state of peace quicker.
Right, interesting. So covering a little bit of the territory you've just been through, it's quite striking how we have the situation where you say that the condition of the nervous system that is the one in which we heal and which all the processes of the body are supported in being as well as possible is actually diametrically opposite to the kind of response most people have to a diagnosis of cancer. They're on red alert sort of maybe most of the day, every day. So it's quite a conundrum, isn't it? It's like very important in a way that there's a resource for meeting this in some way. Otherwise, if you stay in that state of alert all the time, you're not doing yourself any favours at all in terms of recovery.
No, but it is a really hard discussion to have because it's you don't want to point fingers or make people feel that they are in some way not helping themselves to heal, not helping their body to be in a state where either the medical treatment, the chemotherapy or immunotherapy can work, or indeed the actual body's own immune system can get to work. So I'm careful when I talk about that, because yes, we do want to help our bodies get into this calm, resilient state. And yet when you're faced with something like a cancer diagnosis, as you know, I had a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, yes. 5 years ago or 4 years ago now, and it's absolutely terrifying. Right. And of course, from an evolutionary perspective, that is the most terrifying, fearful place mm-hmm. you can find yourself. And of course you get all of this sympathetic drive. It's very difficult to actually pull yourself back away from that because it's so terrifying. And I think the first point is just to notice that when you have shifted into that, and notice it's completely normal, and it would be strange if you weren't in that state. But also to notice when you go to the other extreme end of the spectrum, which is where you start to feel a bit numb and almost can't feel, because that's not something that happens really a lot of the time. And we don't really talk about it enough. The fact that, yes, it can be so stressful and so anxiety provoking. And then sometimes if we've experienced it as such a big trauma, we can almost be tipped over the other kind of end of the spectrum where we feel nothing and we can feel numb.
Right.
And again, we need to bring it back from there. But it takes time, and it's not something that can happen quickly, because our bodies are wired to do that. And it's all these trauma-informed practices that we can do, things like shaking and dancing and moving, that help us to come back out of that state. And only then, really, once we feel more connected to our bodies, can we then start to do the other practice, which might be the yoga or the meditation.
So that's like another layer to get through, in a way. It's cloaking the actual condition of terror, which you would need to get back to in order that you can then actually come to terms with it and find a way of meeting the challenge a bit more calmly.
Yeah, and it's a real process of just compassion with yourself and patience as well, because I don't think you can rush any of these processes, because at the end of the day, we are animals. As humans, we are animals, and we think that we can think our way out of situations our way out of these situations. But, we are meant to go through these processes, and there's a reason for it. And we just need to make sure we've got the practices on the other side that can help us to get out of them. So often people talk about that, how animals on the Serengeti, when, say, for example, a gazelle is chased by a lion, it's terrifying for the gazelle, and they run and run and run as fast as they can. And then at some point, they lose their energy. They have to lie down and rest and hope the lion doesn't get them. And then if the lion moves on and doesn't kind of loses interest or hasn't seen them, then they'll get up and shake, and they shake it all out and then just get on with grazing. Right. Whereas humans, we don't really do that. We haven't been trained to do that when we go through something huge. It's quite terrifying. And it's so important for us to do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of burden of societal ideas about how you behave and what you do and what you don't do, really, aren't there? And so it's quite a narrowing force that stops natural expression.
Exactly. Everyone's different. Everyone's unique. So we all find our own way to go through these experiences as well. There's no one size fits all by any means. We're all very unique in our physiology. Mm. It's just good to have these frameworks and practices that we can draw on if we find them useful.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We've got to the stage now where there are some things which you can point to which are helpful. And we can even say why they are. It's you know, things have moved a long way in that way, from it all being terribly vague and try this and it might help. You know, it's quite a step forward, really.
It is. I'd love to see more of it talked about in medicine or signposted, just because I didn't have any as a patient myself.
Right.
And I had to go and find out all these practices for myself.
Yeah.
And it really went on a bit of a thawing process to come back to feeling safe in my body, because it's so hard to build resilience if you're disconnected from your body,
right?
As well,
right? Yeah. Okay, maybe we can move on now into the slightly more intangible realm of the mind. That can be enormously challenging territory when dealing with the existential threat of cancer, of course, as we said, and its effect on your future plans, you know, your life as a whole. It can be a life-shattering moment being diagnosed. Would you say a bit about the particular challenges that the mind can throw up in response to cancer and to cancer treatment, and even to the remission after cancer? And, you know, maybe speak from your personal experience, as you have been, as well as that of people you've helped.
Yeah, so it is, you said, absolutely shattering, because I think as humans, we are under this illusion that we're under control of our lives. And when we're suddenly faced with the reality that actually things are out of our control, we have all this uncertainty, it just sends us into an absolute spin. Because so often we have been used to being able to decide what we're going to do with our lives, have a bit of direction over it. And when that's all taken away from us, we have to navigate this strange space that we're just not used to. And like you said, the mind likes security. We like to know what's going on. And again, talking about the mind, when we look at the brain and certain parts of the brain, like the amygdala, that's our part of our brain that's really charged when we're scared. So this ancient reptilian part of our brain, so the amygdala, takes over. And any rational thought actually can go out the window. And again, we're just in this fearful place. So again, we have all these amazing practices that we can come back to, but when we're in the state of fear, we might not feel ready to go and seek them. We might not know about them, or again, we might just be shut down. So I just always invite everybody to think about how they can bring their mind out of that state of fear. And it might be simple things like getting out into nature, and anything that for you personally helps you to just get out of your head a bit. So I'm a huge fan of sunsets. That was really my refuge when my mind was so busy and scared. I'd try and make sure I went outside and saw a sunset, just because in that moment my mind was quiet. Whereas when I tried things like meditation, I couldn't quiet my mind. And if anything, it was ramping up, and I'd be more distressed at the end of sitting down for 20 minutes because I couldn't find that stillness for a long time. Mm. So it was for me getting out in nature. But obviously we're, again, all unique, and we just have to find out what works for us and what can calm us down. And just so we can have a little bit of a pause and a break from our busy mind, really.
Right. And, you know, there are all these different places along the road when we have cancer, where we're faced with different kinds of threat, and circumstances are continually changing, and usually where there's this waiting game going on, is my experience. People are just in a place of waiting for the next thing, you know, whatever it is, and they're always slow in coming as well, and a sort of an agony of waiting. So I think that the word you used there was uncertainty, and that seems to be the territory that people live in when they have cancer. And in some ways, what we're talking about is coming to terms with living with uncertainty.
Definitely. And I know for me personally, and you know, this is my journey, but coming to a place of surrender was the best thing that could have happened to me, because I'd been living in a state of uncertainty for so many years. And I'm sure many patients can resonate with this feeling of I couldn't get on with my life. I was living very much scan to scan. So I was having scans every 3 months and being really cautious about what plans I'd make beyond right. that next scan, not really wanting to agree to go to wedding invitations, or not, you know, just really simple things. I didn't want to commit to it in case I had become more ill or in case I didn't fill up to it. So my life became very small in lots of ways, which was a bit of a negative. But then I think the flip side of that was the positive, that I was living very much in the moment. There was a real sense of forced mindfulness. I was very much in the day, that, rather than racing ahead to the next week or month, which actually was quite lovely, because I'd never had that before. I'd always been thinking about my future and the next plan or the next job or where I wanted to be. And actually, I just slowed right down. But this idea of surrender really came probably at my lowest point, to be honest, where I just thought, I've tried everything now. I've tried all the supplements, all the diets, and the cancer is still progressing. So really, my uncertainty was so huge. If anything, I just thought, this might not go my way, and I just had to give up all control. So it was a real finality in, just surrendering everything to, whether you want to call it a higher power or just whatever was going to happen next, really, and just saying, this is beyond me. And really, that helped me so much, because I'd been gripping on for dear life. I'd been definitely not been graceful, and I think suddenly I felt lighter and it was easier, because I just thought, this isn't all my responsibility. I've done an awful lot here. So there's something in surrender, which again, you know, I think resilience and surrender go very much hand in hand, because the more that we can actively surrender to certain situations, and that's not to say that we need to surrender all the time. Obviously we want to be active and help ourselves where we can, but by surrendering and leaning into that, we actually help to also build our resilience, because this helps our adaptability, and it helps us to get through the hard time. And by doing that, when we get to the other side, we can then do it a little bit easier next time. Maybe the surrender will come slightly easier when we're faced with the next challenge.
Right. Okay. Well, there's our second topic for the day, surrender, which you've been speaking about there. And I think it's going to come in to all the rest of the discussion. The kind of flip side. It's interesting, the way you described your own situation there, that actually, in order to be ready for it, you actually have to sort of tried everything, don't you? It got to that end point. You're not really ready for it before then. If you still think there's more you can do and you're going to get it, you know, you're going to get the whole thing sorted, if you just keep going, you're not actually ready for that moment where you're prepared to do that. So it's a place you need to get to. You can't really do it before then, I think.
I've thought about this so much since, because there's this very specific moment where I remember surrendering. I was stood on my parents' doorstep, and it was the evening, and I looked up at the stars and just had this moment of completely letting go and saying, whatever's going to be next, that's what will be, and I have to just find peace with it and accept where I'm at. And I do wonder whether I could have come to that place myself a little bit earlier. I'm not sure whether you do have to almost be pushed right to the edge to give up, because I think the reason why I think it's tied up with resilience is because it is a practice, again, very much like this resilience muscle that we can strengthen, and these practices that we can bring in to build our resilience. I feel like surrender is a practice and something that we can also build and become more familiar with.
Yeah.
Because the more we practice letting go of control in our everyday life, so maybe before an illness comes into our life or before a big challenge comes in, maybe that makes it easier to surrender when the big life events happen. I don't know. So I do try and practice surrender now, just in my day-to-day life. I just try and question, why am I holding on so tight to that? Why am I trying to control that? Is there a way that I can maybe just let go of into surrender and also trust beyond myself? And I guess this is also where we start to talk about more of the spirit element, which, right, you know, I love talking about, yeah, because it's been such a change for me going from the Lauren before cancer to where I am now, because I didn't have any spiritual practice. I didn't have a faith. I definitely would, you'd have never heard me talking about words like trust and surrender and the universe. I mean, that was just not in my vocabulary.
Right.
And yet now, having gone through the experience and really coming to that place of surrender and acceptance and having to lean into something else beyond me to help support me and really get me through my darkest period, I do talk in that way because I know how powerful and how helpful it was for me at the time. And this idea of trusting in something beyond ourselves, I think it's such a lovely way to move through life, whether you're ill or not, whether you're currently going through a massive challenge or not, just knowing that we're being held in by something bigger than ourselves. It's so reassuring. And in that way, it comes all the way back to the fact that the body, mind and spirit are connected, because once we can surrender and let go of that control, we actually find our nervous system just relaxing and we sink into that parasympathetic state,
right,
which is obviously where the healing happens and where our body can heal and the immune system can get to work. So it really is all connected, all of these different concepts. Mm-hmm. And it does always come back, for me at least, to the nervous system and the physical body. And I like that it's not so esoteric that it's disconnected from that.
Yeah.
There's a reason why these practices are so helpful on a physical level.
Right. That's one of the reasons I really enjoy talking to you, is because you're willing to go there with exploring what would be described as esoteric matters. But you're a very practical, trained medical person, and you do tie this all back to what you know about the physical body as well. It's great. Science and spirit, look at the whole thing together. And fantastic. And what you were just saying there about immediately tying this surrender back to trust is, as you say, it's one package, really, the whole thing, isn't it? You can't think about surrender if you don't trust that that's the very ground on which surrender can happen. And finding that trust wherever you find it is an extraordinary thing. But my own experience is that human beings, we will fight to the last, do everything else first. You know, it'll be the last thing on our list we're going to try. It's kind of I don't know why exactly. I think it's a kind of fear that we inherit almost in our genes from the generation before. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense that we'll hold on so hard to ideas in our head rather than what's actually the facts around us, the truth. But nonetheless, that's what we do, and we'll fight to the death for it practically.
We just love to be in control, don't we? We don't well, want to surrender. Surrender, I think we feel that surrender is giving up, whereas actually surrender can be a really active process, because we don't want to give up. Like you said, we want to fight till the very end.
Mm.
So it's counterintuitive in lots of ways, because we think, oh, we're just giving up, and therefore, you know, we're kind of rolling over and saying, you know, I'm not involved anymore. This is beyond me. But actually what we're doing is just making space for something else to look after us, really, to take the pressure off ourselves to be the ones that heal ourselves or fix ourselves or get through the experience. And trust is just such a beautiful word. I love coming back to that. And you know, I don't have a religious belief myself, right, but I would say I now have a spiritual trusting belief that I have to trust that I'm being looked after and I'm being guided to whatever's next for me. And it might be that I really don't like what's next for me.
Right.
You know, I'm only a month away from another round of scans. So I'm still having scans every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy when you're in remission and far away from scans to start talking about things like trust and surrender and being okay with whatever's out there, whatever comes next. The reality is, of course, when you're face to face with another scan, and at any moment your life could change, you could be back, you know, having lots of tests and surgeries and scans and things, that's when the practice is really, that's when you have to really lean into these practices. It's right. when you are faced with the challenges. Yeah. So that's something I'm doing at the moment, just trying to come back to knowing that whatever will be, and worry, as we know, it's very difficult not to worry, but as soon as I feel myself worrying, I know that's not having a positive impact on my immune system, on my body. So just trying to catch myself, really, and knowing that it's completely understandable. And of course, I will always be nervous and worried about scans. That's just human nature.
Yeah.
But also just on the other side of it, just thinking more about that surrender. How can I just relax a little bit more into it?
Right. So it's kind of like being big enough to encompass the difficulty you're facing and the emotions and thoughts you're having in the face of that, which, as you say, are completely natural.
Yeah, and that's it. I think not just not running away from those emotions. Like we said at the beginning,
yes.
making room for the whole spectrum, not thinking that we should be accessing peace and feeling, you know, positive and optimistic, because sometimes that's not the reality. And the worst thing we can do is actually suppress how we're truly feeling. We want to be truthful with ourselves.
Yes.
We want to be truthful with the people around us, because we know that when we do suppress our emotions, again, that can really affect our bodies, that can affect our physiology. It's really stressful to be suppressing our emotions. It's much better to express them and be honest with everyone around us.
Mm-hmm. But still, you know, just the fact that we're honest about it and expressing it doesn't mean anything about what we're actually going to do. You know, we can say it's that somehow encompassing the difficulty and being real about it is a powerful thing in itself.
And it's incredibly complicated. In some ways, I'm very aware I'm saying one thing on one hand and one on the other, and it's difficult. It's a difficult path to tread. And having these practices, the various things that can help us to actually surrender, because it's not a cognitive process. We can't think ourselves into surrender. It's the things that we can do, like journaling or speaking to friends and family, speaking to therapists, getting out into nature, meditating, maybe praying if you're religious, or even if you're not religious, just praying to something beyond yourself. All of those practices can help us to lean into the surrender, because again, it is very much a practice. It's not something that we just do once and then we're there. All of these things, unfortunately, take continued effort and continued commitment.
Do you find, though, that a bit like you were saying with the, when we were in the realms of the physical, that something actually developed and got stronger, that the trust that you're talking about here that allows surrender is something that gets in some way stronger or easier to do?
I think so, yes. I think that's tied up with the resilience as well. It's, I feel myself now when something happens to me, I'm less reactive to it. I catastrophize less. Maybe that's because I had, you know, active stage 4 cancer. And for example, now I've got a broken ankle. I'm speaking to you with a cast on.
Yes.
And I've been off work for 5 weeks. So, you know, it's another thing that's happened. And I've had numerous health challenges over the years stage 4 cancer. And every time it happens, I do feel more able to get through it. And I don't know whether that's because maybe I don't feel as it's quite as, you know, it's not life-threatening. But I imagine it's because I'm able to just say, okay, well, this is what's happened here. How can I turn this into maybe a positive, or maybe not even a positive, but find the silver lining? And I think meaning has to come into any discussion about both resilience and surrender, because meaning is really where we can find the gold, and where we can look back from the challenge and say, okay, actually, I learned this, or I gained this. So there's a real sense of needing to reframe. So really, when we're talking about the mind and how we can get through situations, very much thinking, kind of the mental strategies, reframing is so important. And that might be Just taking a step back and thinking, what's the goal here? Or it might be needing to do things like affirmations that can help you to start to rewire your brain processes, your mind processes, so that you can get into that more positive state. And it's not to say, again, that we're moving away from the negative emotions if they're true and if they're valid for you, because very much we want to make sure we're still expressing what's true for ourselves. But having said all that, we can definitely start to shift our thinking into a more positive way of being.
Mm-hmm. So kind of the repeated experience you're describing, you've had of coming up against difficulty, moving through it, looking back and saying, oh yeah, well actually that was tough, but look what I learned, has actually kind of prepared you for the next difficulty and having a different perspective on it than maybe you had the first time.
Yeah, every time I've gone through a challenge, even though it's so difficult when I'm in it, I now know and I trust that there will be a reason for it. There will be something that happens as a result of this experience. My life will be in some way rerouted, or I will meet new people. Something will happen that will enable me to live an even more beautiful and more expansive life on the other side. And that's not to say it's not really challenging when I'm in it. I'm so fed up of hopping around for the last 5 weeks.
Yeah.
But there's already been some amazing things that have happened in it. And if nothing else, I just know that I'm building my resilience. So if nothing, you know, very obvious had happened that was positive, I could just sit back and go, okay, I'm building my resilience and I'm learning how to surrender even more. So on a very psycho-spiritual level, I'm growing. Mm. And that's also really reassuring as well. If you can't actually grab, if there's nothing tangible that you can think, yes, this is actually a positive that's come out of this difficult challenge, we can just start to think, actually, what's the growth that's happening here? And how am I changing? And what am I learning about in this moment?
Well, I think it's extraordinarily valuable that people like you are prepared to talk about this stuff publicly, because, of course, for people who are right in the thick of it, you know, they got diagnosed last week or whatever, they will struggle to see any other perspective, or that there could be another perspective even. Maybe they've managed to stay in control in their life quite nicely up until cancer arrived, and now it's being completely, utterly smashed, and they think, well, that's it, you know, life's over as far as I'm concerned. So to hear somebody who's been through that experience come out the other side and looks back and you know, acknowledges the great things that have come out of it as well, and doesn't play down the difficulty either, but is realistic about it, is, well, I think it's needed. I think a lot of people need that, because it's a source of reasonable hope which people need to have.
It's hard, isn't it? Because I'm very aware that as someone who has no evidence of disease on scans, it's I imagine that for people who are at the very beginning of their journey with cancer, like I was 7 years ago, it's on one level probably quite reassuring and hopeful to hear this. But when you're actually in it, and when you're feeling all of those emotions, and it's so terrifying, and you're having really an existential crisis, because that's what it is when you when you're diagnosed with cancer, really. Maybe you can't connect with what I'm saying, and I just would love to say, give it a little bit of time. And it's not something that everyone maybe comes to. I think we all just have our own paths as we walk this messy journey through cancer, and we all come through it in different ways. And even if we don't end up NED, I know plenty of people who are living well with cancer.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they as well will say that there have been a few gifts in there. And I think gifts is, when I say that word, I also cringe a little bit at myself for saying gifts, because I don't think that quite captures what it is, because it isn't really a gift. But I think probably more than anything, it's wisdom.
It's a discovery.
There's a real, we learn more about ourselves. We peel back the layers when we go through these really life-threatening illnesses. We shed the people that are no longer serving us, or maybe no longer looking after us or being there for us. We maybe change jobs, we maybe leave jobs, we get really clear on who we are and what we're about, and just get rid of loads of loads of stuff that we've been carrying. And I think there's something amazing about that as well, because so many people will get to that at the end of their life, maybe, and to get that when you're a bit younger, maybe. You know, I was only 28, 29 when I was first diagnosed. Yes. It's really quite young. Mm. And suddenly I had this big shedding of people, of jobs, of things I was doing, and I got really clear on myself and who I was and what I was about, even though I was also struggling and there was so much suffering in that time. And it really was a journey of kind of getting to that surrender and building my resilience. And it didn't happen overnight. As I said, I was first diagnosed with cancer 7 years ago. So I've been in this space for a long time. Mm. And it has taken time. I think that's a problem as well, because we with cancer, we don't always have time. Things can feel
right.
You know, we're running out of time, or we need it to happen quickly. And it can be really hard as well to just trust that it's happening at the right time. Whatever's happening to us is happening at the right time for us, even if it doesn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, look, we're coming to the end. I love talking about this kind of stuff, Lauren. I could easily go on for hours, but we are coming to the end. So I really appreciated what you've shared with us, what you've told us about your own journey. I do think it's enormously important that people, even if they can't really hear it right now, it's out there. You know, it'll maybe sometime in the future, that thing that you've said about your experience, well, they, aha, you know, it'll be that moment. It'll get in there. But so I just think it's a very important message that needs to go out there, particularly what you're talking about, surrender, actually being prepared to let go of trying to be in control of everything. The enormously important potential of a really difficult situation like cancer. So it's great to talk about it. So thanks so much for joining me today. I'd love to come back to this again sometime in the future. We must have another talk. I'd love it.
Thank you so much, Robin. Yeah, it's been wonderful. And just thank you for giving me the space to talk about this, because, like you said, it's not something that's talked about that much.
No.
And for some people, it can sound very esoteric and so far removed from actually the hard medicine, the hard science. Mm, mm. But I think that we're slowly making room for more of this psycho-spiritual discussion, and I think it's one that'll be, it's really beneficial. It was beneficial for me, but like you said, we're all on this individual journey, so it depends whether it resonates for you. You may well come to it at some point, or if you don't, that's also absolutely fine. We're all individuals, and it's just kind of muddling your way through it and finding out what helps you to build your resilience and look after yourself on the journey.
Hmm. All right, thanks very much.
Thanks, Robin.
Dr. Lauren is inspirational. Do check out her website, her podcasts, and of course, past editions of this show when she's been my guest. It's simple to access any past shows. Just go to yestolife.org.uk, scroll down until you see the link to the Yes to Life show, and when you get to the Yes to Life show page, you'll find a search feature for all 300 or so past shows. You can search by subject, guest, or keyword. And while you're there, you can also comment on shows or indeed make suggestions for future shows. We'd always love to hear from you. You can still reserve your place at Yes to Life's upcoming 2-day online congress on nutritional science and cancer. It's on the 27th and 28th of March, and you can still book at early bird prices. Get them while you can. As people have come to expect, we have a range of brilliant experts from the territory to take us through the latest findings. It's set to be a weekend brimming with learning and insights. To find out more and to book, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk. Click the link in the massive banner at the top, which will take you to the event website, where you'll find out all about the speakers and about the topics they'll be tackling. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, do share details with friends and colleagues or on social media. I'll be back again next week to showcase more expertise, experience and insight from the world of integrative medicine for cancer in the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.